Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us on today's call on the Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program. This call is for organizations and their partners who are considering applying for HVRP funds during this program year, or for organizations that would like to know more about the HVRP program and the application process. Please note that all of the information presented today, excluding the resources and contact information on the last two slides, can be found in the Solicitation for Grant Applications, or SGA. After the presentation, I'll do my best to answer your questions based on what is published on HVRP in the SGA and responses I have received inquiries so far, but additional questions outside of what's described here can be gathered and submitted to DOL Vets for further clarification. These answers and additional pieces of information will be published on the NCHV website on the same page as the teleconference information, and I will guide that to you shortly to make sure you have the correct presentation. For those of you just joining us, let's go ahead and pull up the presentation. If everyone can go to www.nchv.org. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a gray box with a red outline that says NCHV Conference Calls. Please click on that box. Now, right there, you will see a couple bullet points, the first one being HVRP Program and Application, New Applicants. Underneath that, you'll see a link to Presentation, PDF. Please click on that presentation. You want to make sure you are opening the presentation for new applicants, not for returning applicants. When you have this open, it should read Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program. Program and application, new applicants. And once again, that's www.nchv.org on the right-hand side, the gray box with the red outline. And I'll go through that again in about 10 minutes or so in case we have additional folks who join us. Now, everyone, can you please go to slide two? Today, we'll spend approximately 40 to 45 minutes going through the agenda as outlined above. Following the presentation, we'll open up the call to questions and comments. Once again, all material presented here is from the SGA itself. I'll answer questions related to this material, but certain points of clarification beyond what's clearly defined in the SGA will be gathered and submitted to DOL Vets and then posted on the NCHV website in the same location as the teleconference materials. If we do not get to your question today, please feel free to submit your question via email, and I can respond directly to you or include your question in the request to Vets. The audio of this call will also be posted on the NCHV website within the next few days, and the audio from the first call and from the other call for returning applicants is currently posted. First, let's go over some basic information about HVRP. Please join me on slide four. On slide four, you'll see some basic information about the HVRP program. You'll notice that HVRP is the only federal program that focuses exclusively on the employment of veterans who are homeless. Also, I forgot to mention, if at any point you're having technical difficulties, please send me an email at bcrone@nchv.org. My name is Bailey Crone, and I'm the Director of Technical Assistance with NCHV. I'll monitor my emails as we go through the presentation to make sure everyone can hear me well and that you have the presentation handy. Thank you. So still on slide four, starting with this program year, successful applicants will receive a one-year grant with up to 3 years of additional funding pending successful results, which will be discussed later. That is a change from previous years. On slide five, you'll see the two main objectives of HVRP, to provide services to assist in reintegrating homeless veterans into meaningful employment within the labor force, and to stimulate the development of effective service delivery systems that will address the complex problems facing homeless veterans. Your program must have this two-pronged approach of reintegrating homeless veterans into meaningful employment through the provision of employment and supportive services, and of coordinating the service delivery system to address the barriers to employment faced by veterans in your region and in the nation. There's no set model for successful HVRP programs, but we'll talk about some of the key components of programs and of your application that are really necessary per the SGA. On slide six, you'll see the eligibility requirements. state and local workforce investment boards established under Sections 111 and 117 of the Workforce Investment Act are eligible to apply. Keep in mind that a state agency may propose in its application to serve one or more of the jurisdictions located in its state. Now, this does not preclude a city or county agency from submitting an application to serve its own jurisdiction. If you're a nonprofit entity, you must submit an IRS statement indicating your 501c3 status. If you're a faith-based entity that makes hiring decisions based on religious beliefs, you may still be eligible under Title I of the Workforce Investment Act. If you are awarded, you'll be provided with additional information about obtaining this exception at that time. Also, please note that entities organized under Section 501c4 of the Internal Revenue Code are not eligible to receive funds under this announcement. To help meet the Interagency Council on Homelessness and the VA's goal to end homelessness, DOL Vets has adopted for HVRP the expanded definition of homelessness as outlined in the HEARTH Act. You'll see this on slide 7. I'm not going to read through all of that because you can read it, but do note that this is an expanded definition and that there are additional elements that were not in the previous SGA as to who can be represented as homeless. On slide 8, you'll see additional points of eligibility for your participants. As we mentioned on the slide previously, they must be homeless and they must also be a veteran according to these qualifications. I also included the definition for chronically homeless, as this SGA does make a point of emphasis on working with and providing for chronically homeless veterans. If you do have the network and are able to work with chronically homeless veterans, you may be eligible for additional points in your technical narrative, which we will discuss later. Moving on to slide 9, now the distinction between urban and non-urban status is critical and must be clearly defined in your application. To decide which category your geographic location fits into, you'll want to use data from the 2000 census to find the largest 75 cities. Again, that's using the 2000 census. And you'll want to include documentation and maps wherever possible to indicate whether you are an urban or a non-urban grantee. A little bit about the funding levels. Note that while up to $2.5 million are designated for each category for both urban and non-urban, the actual distribution of grants will be up to the grant officer and will be dependent on the strength and merit of the applications. So it might not be exactly $2.5 million for each one of those. Also note that in your application, you do not want to exceed these funding levels, which would be $300,000 for urban grantees and $200,000 for non-urban grantees. If you exceed those funding levels in your application, you can be deemed unresponsive and your application may not be graded. Also, keep in mind that upon award, the department can negotiate the final award amounts and the final structure of the program. Moving on to slide 10, the purpose of this SGA is for the Department of Labor to help implement the goals presented in the VA's five-year plan to end homelessness and the National Strategic Plan. Successful applicants will demonstrate the ability to design, develop, and execute programs to assist eligible veterans by promoting, preparing, and improving participants to create successful training, employment, and retention outcomes. I pulled these sets of three from the actual SGA itself to show the important reliance on creating strong employment possibilities for homeless veterans and the need to partner directly with organizations that can provide those services. Now, how can applicants successfully accomplish these goals? Through effective service delivery and collaboration. Please go to slide 11. Using these strategies, you and your partner should provide a variety of employment-focused services, including job placement and retention services, job training, counseling, mentoring, supportive services, housing, and other forms of assistance to facilitate the reintegration of homeless veterans in the labor force. Ensuring successful placement and long-term retention involves a coordinated approach to remove the barriers to employment faced by homeless veterans. On slide 12, you'll see a list of the key collaborative partners that have a strong understanding of the barriers to employment that are unique to homeless veterans. Collaboration with key partners in your community, many of whom you probably already work with regularly, is very critical. Applicants are encouraged to utilize the expertise of these groups. They are your partners. The goal of this program is to make sure that efforts are not duplicated and that each partner is using its strategic advantage to advance the cause. Using the resources that exist in your community, especially your DevOps, your Leavers, the one-stop career centers, your VA medical centers, this will help you avoid duplicate efforts and wasted program funds. You're encouraged to utilize through partnerships or through sub-awards, experienced public agencies, private nonprofits, businesses, community-based organizations, and colleges and universities, especially those with traditionally high employment of minorities. These organizations often have an understanding of unemployment and the barriers to employment unique to homeless veterans, and they often have a very strong familiarity with the area to be served. They will also have the linkages to the one-stop career centers and the capacity to effectively provide the necessary supportive services. Also, it's mentioned continuously throughout the SGA that you really need to be a part of your continuum of care and to be actively involved in your local 10-year plan. You also want to make sure that you're involved in your local stand-down, which I will discuss in a minute here. Going on to slide 13, the scope of your program design. Now, it must include some key elements, either directly or through collaborative agreements. These elements are outreach, intake and assessment, employment, training, coordination, and housing. If you didn't get those, that's fine. We're going to go through them in a little bit more detail. There's a lot of useful information in the SGA for each one of these components, but I'm just going to go over the most necessary critical pieces of each that must be included in your program and in your application in order for your application to be graded and be deemed successful. Please note that you'll still need to read and digest the SGA thoroughly. Consider today's discussion an overview of what you need to know and an outline of the really critical elements, but the SGA itself is really the key to understanding this program and application. So going to the first portion, program design, outreach, which is on slide 14. For those of us who just joined the call, I'm going to briefly tell you how to access the presentation if you have not yet done so. Please go to www.nchv.org. When you get there, on the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a gray box with a red outline that says NCHV Conference Calls. Please click on that box. Under the first bullet point you'll see there is a presentation PDF link. Please click on that. And the title of the presentation is Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program, Program and Application, New Applicants. We are currently on slide 14. So going back to your program design for outreach, you must provide project orientation and project awareness workshops to service providers in your community. In addition to reaching out to homeless veterans themselves, applicants should explain how their program will connect to entities that can introduce potentially eligible homeless veterans to the HVRP program. So it's a feedback loop. There are many ways to engage in outreach. You can attend seminars. You can develop MOUs, which are memorandums of understanding with your partners. But keep in mind that this outreach must happen. Stand-down participation is another really critical element. Please note, too, that stand-down funding should not be included in your budget here. It's a separate application. If you do have questions about stand-down funding and about applying for that funding, or stand-down development overall, please let me know. I have a few resources listed on that at the end of this presentation, and I can help you through that process. You'll want to specifically reach out to direct service providers in your community, so soup kitchens, shelters, the Social Security Administration, your VA, the state workforce agencies, your local one-stops, the veteran service organizations in your area, and others. Community-based organizations. You have to make sure you're engaged with your Disabled Veteran Outreach Program representatives, the DevOps, who I'm going to mention quite often, and the local Veterans Employment Representatives, which are the Leavers, as they're critical components to success. Also, it might go without saying, but successful outreach to homeless veterans themselves requires staff with direct personal experience doing outreach, especially to homeless veterans. So keep that in mind when you do develop your staffing plan. On slide 15, you'll see a graphic representation of this outreach project. You'll see your organization reaching out to both homeless veterans and to their partners. You'll see homeless veterans coming to you. You see the partners coming to you, both to provide you with information and with questions about what the program could offer. Then you also see the bottom loop where homeless veterans are going to your partners who are then referring the homeless veterans to your organization. The purpose of outreach is to facilitate this strong interaction. Moving on to program design, intake, and assessment. Each individual must be assessed to gauge job readiness level, their interests, their needs, and their barriers to employment. Sometimes a homeless veteran will need to be referred to another treatment program first, such as a substance abuse program, before being enrolled in HVRP. When the homeless veteran has been stabilized, he or she can move from the assessment to the enrollment phase. That's the difference between assessment and enrollment. A lot of times your program will have a higher number of assessments than it will enrollments because of that referral process. You're going to need to be able to, through your community connections or internal programs funded through other sources, connect veterans in need of treatment to those facilities where they can get the care they need before they focus on becoming job ready. This will help ensure the success of your program participant. You must connect a veteran to VA for pension benefits or compensation claims, either using your VSOs in your community, your veteran service organizations, or by connecting with the VA directly. And you must track the progress on the claims for these veterans. Moving on to slide 17, a formal employment and training plan needs to be created for each individual. Once the IEP, the individual employment plan, is completed, the participant can be ready for training and employment. Keep in mind that compensated work therapy and classroom training, while they should be written into this IEP, do not count as actual employment. They count toward training. This IEP is a useful tool for tracking your participants' progress and should be continuously updated. You must provide or arrange for a provision of supportive services to facilitate the positive tracking with the IEPs for your participant. And you want to make sure you connect your participant to the 9 important employment services that are listed here. These can often be provided in coordination with your DVOPs and your leavers, with whom you should develop a strong relationship or a memorandum of understanding when possible. These services are listed on slide 17. Participants that are ready for employment should also be referred to their one-stop career centers. By using the expertise of your DVOPs, your leavers, and the folks at the one-stop career centers, you can avoid duplication of efforts and you can ensure successful long-term placement for your veterans. Keep in mind, too, that your grant officer, technical representative, your GOTR, can help facilitate access to these resources in the early stages of your program. Also, to facilitate strong retention and tracking of outcomes, VETS encourages creative incentive approaches. These could be things like one-on-one mentoring with former participants who have since exited the program and shown successful long-term retention, or this could be something as simple as a transportation voucher. Keep in mind that at least 80% of your enrolled HVRP participants must participate in meaningful job skills training activities. These are training activities that can be tailored to the veteran and that focus on their specific needs and interests. These can include classroom trainings, remedial education activities, OJT, on-the-job trainings, apprenticeships, licensure programs, and so on. There's also a difference between basic skills training versus employment training. Basic skills and financial training, while useful and while it should be provided, does not count toward the 80% threshold. Also keep in mind that you want your training programs to generally be less than 1 year in length so they can be completed within the program year time frame. This also can ensure longer-term success and more completion by the participants of your program, because your training program will be shortened and it's a faster track for them to be involved in employment opportunities. On slide 19, coordination. We've already talked quite a bit about the importance of coordination with local partners, so I'm just going to highlight a few key points here. So please pay special attention to pages 13 and 14 for additional partners with whom you should have a good relationship. Please also note that grantees will be expected to register as an employment network in the Ticket to Work program, and the grantees themselves should be expected to register as an employment network. Moving on to housing, You must provide or have partners that can provide appropriate housing options for your enrollees. This means differentiating between emergency, transitional, and permanent housing options and being able to make appropriate referrals. This involves a very strong knowledge of the needs of your specific homeless veteran population so that you can make sure you are connecting them to the appropriate type of housing. HVRP funds cannot be used for housing in any way, so be sure you recognize that. And keep in mind that you must do this for at least the number of planned enrolled participants in your program. You must provide them with housing opportunities or at least connections to housing. This would be a good time to point out the increased focus on chronically homeless veterans in this SGA, especially those that are eligible for and in the process of obtaining HUD-VASH vouchers. If you encounter a homeless veteran who would be eligible for HUD-VASH voucher, you can refer the participant to this program after enrollment to the HUD-VASH program. Participants are still eligible for HVRP if their voucher hasn't been executed and if the grantee can document previous homelessness for the veteran prior to securing housing. On slide 21, you'll see the organizations that we had previously listed for collaboration, plus all of these critical elements of your program design. You'll see lots of arrows here. The point of this slide is to show you that each one of these organizations is going to be extremely critical to leading to the success of each one of these five areas. So you want to make sure that you're involved with them at every step of the way and that you have a mutually reliable system. Now, following the award, you're going to receive really extensive training on the reporting requirements, but I'm going to list them here and give the thresholds just for reference. The grantee is required to be fully compliant with all of the plan performance goals that are going to be outlined in your final award, and you must meet at a minimum 85% of the plan cumulative quarterly goals. If you don't meet this minimum rate, you can be put on a corrective action plan, which is called a CAP, and you must submit that if you don't meet 85% of your planned cumulative quarterly goals. The information is submitted through a system called VOPAR, which you'll learn more about post-award. Below that, you'll see the performance measures, the four main performance measures. Other measures are reported, but these ones are largely used to gauge your performance and to gauge whether you should be eligible for future year funding. We'll discuss reporting requirements again at the end of the presentation when we go over the requirements for additional funding years as well. But please note the rates of 65% and the performance target of $2,800 for your cost per placement. This is actually the average cost per placement from program year 2009, and that is why that is used. All right, now that we've talked about the program design, let's talk about the actual application and what is really required. I'm just going to go through the really critical pieces that you must have in your application, so this part is very, very critical. On slide 25, there's the basic outline or the basic structure of the application. You can earn up to 110 points. It's broken down into three sections, the executive summary, the technical proposal, which is the 110 points, and we'll go through each one of those five pieces as well, and the cost proposal is the third section. On slide 26, you'll see basic directions. There's a 60-page maximum and a 20-page maximum on your technical proposal. You'll want to include page numbers. You want to use tab dividers for your sections and subsections. Now, if these are full-page tab dividers without writing on them, they don't count toward your page maximum. Also, keep in mind that cost sharing and matching funds are not required, but they're encouraged. And as I mentioned previously, the initial selection does not always equal the final approval. The technical representative with Department of Labor does have that authority to negotiate with grantees upon award to finalize their application. Just remember, as you'll see on slide 27, to include all requirements or you lose points and run the risk of being non-responsive. And as you're developing your application, please keep in mind, is my program employment focused? Because each section of it should be focused in that direction. Even though you don't receive evaluation points on the executive summary and the cost proposal, know that those must be included for your application to be deemed responsive and graded. Let's move on to section one, the executive summary, which should be about 1 to 2 pages long. There are major components listed here. You want to describe the geographic area, the type of grants, once again, extremely important. Make sure you outline if it's going to be urban versus non-urban. You want to outline your overall strategy with a timeline and discuss your proposed outcomes. The Section 2 technical proposal has a 20-page maximum. Should be single-sided, double-spaced, 12-point font, 1-inch margins. There are 5 major components that we're going to go over next. You must demonstrate the program need, your overall strategy. This is a section with the 10 additional possible bonus points if you work with chronically homeless veterans. Your organizational linkages is the third component. The fourth is organizational and staff capacity. And the fifth is your housing strategy. Also keep in mind that some components of the technical proposal will not count toward the 20-page limit, and I'll outline those a little bit later. They are elements that are required in your proposal, but they do not count towards the 20-page maximum. So the first part of your technical proposal is demonstrating need. This is broken into two parts, the basic data and then your detailed data. Your basic data is whether you're urban versus non-urban and the geographic area. Keep in mind that wherever possible, you want to describe your geographic area, but compare it to state and national level data. Providing that comparison is critical at all points in this section. Now, for your detailed data, you want to describe the concentration of homeless individuals and homeless veterans in the proposed project service area. Much of this information can be found in the most recent challenge report or the supplement to the AHAR, or possibly from your very recent local continuum of care point in time count if they pulled together this data. You can find information about poverty and unemployment rates from the census data using the 2000 census. You'll want to know what gaps exist in local services that exacerbate the employment barriers of homeless veterans. The barriers to employment in your area will include direct employment barriers as well as gaps in critical supportive services that are tied to successful employment outcomes. You should know about the employment possibilities in your area as well, including the local job markets and potential opportunities for your veterans. You can find out more about this by being involved with your local chamber and job fairs in your area, and if possible, be involved in the veteran-focused mega hiring fairs that are occurring around the country under the leadership of DOL Vets and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Because you want to make the employment opportunities provided to the veterans in your program localized and based on the local need, having that connection to the local job market is extremely critical. The next section of your technical proposal is your overall strategy. You should include a participant flowchart to show the services and their sequence. All of these are listed on page 19, so I'm not going to read through them here, but you can see what the 7 key components are for your overall strategy. You want to focus on occupations that are locally in demand and offer career growth, as I mentioned. You'll want to include a list of local employers that have pledged to train and then hire your participants. You'll also want to describe how you're going to coordinate with your one-stops and with your DevOps and your leavers to provide specific services and identify the local sources of training for your participants. Remember to be specific and include MOUs, Memorandums of Understanding, as much as possible. For the post-placement follow-up services, you should include an MOU with your one-stop career center if you will be using state unemployment insurance data to substantiate your results. Also here, notice that there is the potential for 10 additional points if you are able to demonstrate an approach for chronically homeless veterans and that you have a network that exists in your community to work directly with them. The next section of your technical proposal is your organizational linkages. You want to describe the quality and the extent of the linkages. With your DevOps and your leavers and your Veterans Workforce Investment Program, you want to describe the types of services to be provided as well as the type of agreement in place. Once again, be specific. You want to describe your link to the federal agencies that are listed on page 25. For employers, education, training, and supportive service providers, you want to say who they are, how that function is being funded, if you are aware of that, and how they're going to be linked into your overall program. While you're developing the section, you want to try and phrase it into into a discussion of how it all fits into your continuum of care, into the 5-year plan and the local 10-year plan. So as you're describing these organizational linkages, make sure you have that overall focus of advancing this this goal within your local area and within the nation as a whole. Moving on to the organizational and staff capacity on slide 33. So there are different requirements for whether you are a previous HVRP grantee or if you've never been an HVRP grantee. You want to know that failure to submit final technical and financial cumulative reports from your most recent HVRP grant periods will make your application unresponsive. Graders don't have access to this data, so include it if you're a previous HVRP grantee. You want to include information on the number of enrollments, the placements, the participant retention, and the cost per placement into employment, as well as the benefits secured. You should include specific outcomes in employment and training programs. Now, if you haven't been an HVRP grantee, you want to try and include data that shows your expertise in a similar program that requires training and similar activities to what is outlined in the HVRP program. And whenever possible, to showcase your results in performance measures that are similar to those as outlined in the SGA for HVRP. Now, while VETS prefers HVRP grantees to be established service providers, they're really open to new applicants with innovative methods. So just keep that in mind as well if you're a new program who is thinking of applying for this funding. I didn't outline the staff experience section, which is on page 26, because it's pretty self-explanatory. You want to include the measures of success for your proposed plan, and be sure to include your most recent audit. And included in this section is an outline of how you plan to outlast federal funding. So please be sure that you're aware of that section as well. Moving on to the last part of your technical proposal, your housing strategy. Once again, be specific and make sure you show how your organization is capable of connecting the veterans that come in your door to either temporary, transitional, or permanent housing, depending on their need. You want to show your rapid responsibility for those homeless veterans that are in need of immediate care. You want to use community resources. Once again, no HVRP funds can be used for housing. That includes rent, deposits, utilities, leasing of vehicles, and so on. You want to coordinate with your partners, so this can include the VA's Grant and Per Diem program, FEMA's food and shelter programs, HUD-VASH and Section 8 housing, and other supportive and affordable permanent housing programs. Now let's move on to Section 3, your cost proposal, which is outlined in slide 35. Be sure to read this section carefully to make sure you don't forget to include a piece of information that's necessary. The cost proposal, while not included in the grading for the technical proposal, is necessary for your application. I've listed here the major components for your cost proposal, and you'll see additional details broken down there as well. Know that equipment purchases over $5,000 must be specifically approved by your GOATR. And don't forget to budget for the post-award conference for 2 representatives from your organization. Once again, be sure to include your audit report. And you must explain fringe benefits that are extraordinary if they are, or considered extraordinary if they're over 35%. So please be sure to include all of these sections that are in your cost proposal. Moving on to slide 36. Now, this is fairly long, but these are all of the critical components of your application that are not included in your 60-page requirement. Some of them are in your technical proposal, some of them are not, but keep in mind that they're not counted toward the 60-page requirement. Some of these are items we already discussed, like the participant flowchart. Other ones we haven't yet discussed but are extremely critical, like the competitive grants plan goals charts. Once again, the audit report. Any of the MOUs that you're going to have, whether they be with service providers that work with chronically homeless veterans, housing providers, staffing entities, training providers, all of those MOUs don't count toward your 60-page requirement, so this is pretty critical to see here. On slide 37, you'll see additional submission details. The performance period is for 12 months, starting July 1st. It includes the 3 follow-up quarters from July 1st, 2012 until March 31st, 2013. Please notice the funding restriction. There can be 1 application per submitting organization and physical location with the same population. And your admin costs cannot exceed 20% of your total award. Also note that you cannot co-enroll participants in HVRP and VWIP. So if you have a VWIP grant, you cannot have the same participants enrolled in both programs. On optional year funding, you can receive up to 3 additional years of funding, but this is not guaranteed. There are fairly strict requirements on receiving additional funding years. You must meet 85% of your planned cumulative goals by the end of the second quarter of the grant period to be eligible for second year funding. And then to be eligible for third year funding, you'll need to complete 85% of your planned cumulative goals by the end of the second quarter of the second year and be fully compliant with the goals outlined in the first option year. To be eligible for optional year funding, you must return all of your reports in on time. And if you are on a corrective action plan, you must deal with those issues in a timely manner. And you want to be sure that you comply with the SGA, with the grant award, and with the general and specific grant provisions. On slide 38, you'll see some more additional submission details. If you're going to mail it overnight or hand deliver it, it must be in by 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You cannot email your submissions. You can also submit it at grants.gov, but if you're going to do that, please be sure to start the process early. This can be very easy to use and user-friendly, but you have to make sure you start it early, as sometimes it could take from a couple days to a week or two to get that whole process moving. Be sure to save your documents in the forms listed here as well. Additional formats might not be translated when they're submitted, so they might the folks who are actually reviewing your application will not be able to open them. If you're mailing your application, be sure to submit the original signed in blue ink with 2 copies of everything. Now, if you submit via grants.gov, you're going to receive 2 emails after your submission. The first one is going to confirm receipt, which should come fairly quickly. The second email will confirm whether your application was rejected due to errors or whether it was validated. Now, if you turn in your application on the last day and it comes back a few days later as rejected due to errors, at that point you will not be able to adapt your application and resubmit it. So if possible, submit your application a few days early so that you can receive both the receipt email and the confirming email that outlines whether your application was rejected or validated. So that way, if for some reason it was rejected, for even a minor reason, you could have that extra time to resubmit. On slide 39, you'll see additional resources. This isn't everything you will need, but it's quite a lot of what you're going to need to develop your application. This includes HVRP-specific information, so the SGA, the press release, your application forms, as well as the information to contact the technical assistance providers for HVRP. I included a link to the 2009 challenge report as well as the veteran supplement, the AHAR. I also included a link for you to find community organizations in your state and local area. I also included some information on stand-down development and financing and a link to the 2011 stand-downs that are currently planned, as well as a link to the ICH website. Now, on slide 40, you'll see contact information. If you have questions about the SGA, those should go to Cassandra Mitchell, who's the grant officer. You'll see her contact information there. If you have questions about this presentation or about HVRP technical assistance, you can contact me. My name is Bailey Crone, and I'm the technical assistance director at NCHV, and my contact information is listed there. At this point, like I said, I went about 40 minutes, so at this point we can go ahead and have Lynn open it up to questions if anyone has questions. And once again, if after this conference call, if you have additional questions, feel free to email those to me. And be sure to indicate whether you would like me to submit that to Department of Labor and post it publicly, or whether this is an organization-specific question and you would like me to keep it just between you and me. So, Lynn, whenever you're ready, we can go ahead and open it up to questions.
Okay. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, that's star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from the line of Jeff Smith.
Hello, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how are you?
Good. On the conference call for the 15th, the question
yes.
was asked about, grant per diem programs,
yes.
was they were
Yes, grant and per diem participants are eligible for HVRP. They are still considered homeless if they are in the grant and per diem program, and so it doesn't matter what length of time they're going to be in it. So if you have folks who are in your grant and per diem program, they would be eligible for HVRP as well.
Along with contract housing then? Contract housing, homeless beds also.
Right, yeah. If it's still considered, you know, that temporary housing, then they would still be eligible for HVRP.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Rhonda Terry.
Yes.
Hi, Rhonda.
Hi. Is the organizational chart part of the 20-page limit or the 60-page limit?
Your organizational chart, so your staff chart, is that what you're talking about?
That's right, the organizational chart.
Right, that actually does count toward the 60-page requirement. Now, your staff bios and resumes don't count, but your organizational chart does count, and I believe that that's in the organizational and staff capacity section.
So it counts in the 20-page limit then?
Yes.
Rather than the 60?
Well, it counts in the 60 as well.
Yeah, it counts in the 60, but it's going to take one page away from the 20-page limit.
Correct. Okay.
And your next question comes from the line of Sierra Major.
Seen, I think, 3 different due dates for this proposal, and starting to get a bit confused. So, with
5 p.m. July 8th.
Sorry?
5 p.m. on July 8th.
July 8th. Okay. How
yes.
is it possible that the program evaluation year begins before the proposals are actually submitted?
So the actual program year for HVRP always goes from July 1st until June 30th of the next year.
Okay.
That's how the program year has always been structured. Now, I think with the organizations upon award, I'm sure there will be discussion with the Department of Labor about that first month because, you know, we're not entirely sure when the awards will actually come out. It might not be until August 1st. But usually if you're just starting up your program, it could take that first month to really get it up and rolling anyway. So
mm-hmm.
while the programs technically do start July 1st, you'll want to start your program operations. Applications aren't due until the 8th. And then the final awards might not come out until later in the month. But Department of Labor will specifically address that, and they're very aware of that as well. So upon award, they'll make sure to confer with grantees about that.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Alexandria Bell.
Actually, I was just going to ask the question about due dates, so you can move along to the next one.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Harold Parker.
Hello, Harold.
Hello. What's your name again? I couldn't quite make it out.
It's Bailey Crone.
Oh, Bailey. Okay.
Like Irish cream.
And the last name, can you spell that?
Crone, C-R-O-N-E.
Okay. Do you have a toll-free number also that I can call you?
We have, what is our vet's number? Do you have my email address there? Shoot me an email and I'll send you the 1-800 number. So NCHV also operates a 1-800 number for providing referrals and assistance to homeless veterans. So I'll send you that phone number.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's
You're
it.
You're welcome.
All right.
And again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Your next question comes from the line of Katie Hill.
Hello?
Hi, Katie.
Yes, I was just wondering, you referred to the 2000 census data multiple times, and I was just wondering if that was the official data that we're supposed to be using, or if we have information from the 2010 census, if we can use that.
So the designation of urban versus non-urban, those 75 cities, was using the 2000 census data.
Okay.
So I would suggest staying with that as much as possible, but if you have more updated numbers, you can use that. Just be sure you specifically reference which data you're using. But when you're addressing whether you're an urban or a non-urban grantee, you want to use that 2000 census data, because that's how Department of Labor has determined for this program year.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And I want to make a quick comment for the gentleman that asked about the toll-free number. It's 1-800-VET-HELP. Again, that's 1-800-VET-HELP, and that is NCHV's toll-free number. That's it's open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. to 5 o'clock p.m. And just as additional note, it's actually not open today. We had to evacuate our building due to a fire next door, but it will be up and running again tomorrow. Any more questions?
Yes. And your next question comes from the line of Valerie Morusco. And Valerie, your line is open.
Hello? Hello?
Hi. Did you have a question?
Yes. We're a per diem awardee, and I'm sorry, I was being drawn away.
That's okay. It happened.
I've already got a business plan that I've put together, and you know, we're a per diem. I mean, how do I submit this? I have a business plan that I put together a long time ago, a compensated work therapy program business plan for a specific type of a service. And, I mean, that wouldn't count as part of the as part of the pages, would it? So 20 pages and 60 pages, would this just be part of an addendum to what I'm trying to put together, or
I
have
what
to
I would,
count the
what,
business plan, which is,
right.
Yeah, like 26 pages study on a specific service that I want to offer
right.
to employ the people in our per diem program. That would would that count, or?
Yeah, what I would say to you there is you want to follow the structure that's given in the SGA for applying for the HBRP funds. So if possible, if you can adapt that business plan to fit into these specific sections, you would want to do so. Because a lot of the organizations that apply, you know, many of them do have those strategies for incorporating grant and per diem participants into an HVRP program, but you want to make sure that you do follow the strict structure that's outlined in the SGA for the application. So if possible, you know, I can't entirely comment on it without knowing what the business plan looks like, but you'll want to maybe take the pieces from your business plan and put them into the appropriate sections that are outlined in the SGA. I can't emphasize enough how critical it is to make sure you follow that set format for the ease of the graders for HVRP.
All right. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Your next question comes from the line of Keith Hammond.
Hi, Bailey.
Hi, Keith.
I have a question on the assessments. It's slide 16 and page 9 and 10 of the SGA.
Okay.
Concerning the documentation of assessments,
mm-hmm.
What is required? I mean, what type of documentation are you looking for assessments?
I mean,
the definition.
The definition for assessment?
Well, I mean, you get the definition in the SGA.
Right. I mean, you're going to want to determine the job readiness of that individual, so you just have to make sure you're assessing for specific qualities. So for their overall job readiness level, you want to know what their interests are, their needs, their education, their specific barriers to employment, so that you can make those referrals either before enrolling them in the program or resources that they're going to need as they go through their employment process.
Okay.
I mean, this is going to feed into the individual employment plan, the IEP, so you just have to create an assessment tool that can bring all those pieces together.
Which comes to my next question. Mm-hmm. If their focus is, the VA benefits or SSID, if they're trying to make a case for a disability.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, at what point do we help these veterans when they're not going to be looking for work because they're looking for benefits?
Now, you don't necessarily specifically have to do that assessment on their benefits needs. A lot of times the VA Medical Center can be very useful in doing that piece, as well as the VSOs in your community. So that might be a time where, you know, if you have an individual who's not job ready and who's not actually looking for employment, that might be a time to refer them to the VSOs and to the VA, maybe to the homeless program coordinator at the VA Medical Center there, to get them hooked in with their VA benefits instead.
Not a problem there. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, at what point do we take a homeless veteran who needs help now,
mm-hmm.
however,
right.
the benefit process, even with SAMHSA, is going to take over 10 months to almost a year and sometimes longer to get them, shall we say, a disability check for, for existence. But they need a job now, but they can't get the job now because then it shows that they can work and they can't get the benefits. They get caught in a catch-22. Does this particular grant allow for them to be assessed labor-ready, so to speak, but, later on they go ahead and get their benefits? Now,
I mean, that's, I'm not an expert with the eligibility for the benefits and how that directly relates to, whether they're employed or not. So that's something that you'd really have to talk with the VSOs in your area and with that coordinator at the VA Medical Center about to know exactly at what point these veterans who would potentially be eligible for disability payments, how that might conflict with the employment services you're going to provide. So I can't really speak to that because I'm not an expert with the benefits portion of it. So I'm just going to suggest that you talk to them. I know that that's not a full answer, but they'll have much more targeted information on that than I would.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. I think we have time here for one more question.
And your final question will come from the line of Lenore Crawford.
Hello, Lenore, are you there? Okay, I think she might have hung up.
Okay.
All right, well, I guess we can take one more if there's another one.
Okay, one moment. Your next question comes from the line of Alexandra Dunn.
Hi, Bailey.
Hi, Alex, how's it going?
Hi, good. I have a question on the budget narrative.
Yes.
Okay, it asks for the direct cost descriptions for applicants and sub-applicants. Well, we are the lead, and we want to have a contract with CLC, which is a community learning center. They offer training for job readiness, and we want a contract with them. Am I supposed to do a direct cost description on them if it's, we might be contracting with them for $75,000?
Then you'll want to do, you're going to want a really detailed cost breakout. That'll keep you from having to answer additional clarification questions later. So if it's possible, especially for that large of an amount, you should probably do, as much.
Okay, well, our other partner is going to be Tarrant County College.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be like $96,000 because we have all these programs there that we want to provide for the veterans. So I can't really ask if Tarrant County College to provide personnel breakdown of their professors. So I'm just interested in, can I just do a direct cost? And then when I talk about my who I want to contract with, I am detailed mm-hmm. about the courses that we want to pay for the veterans if they choose to go that route.
Well, and that's a direct cost.
The
main aspect of it is just making sure that each specific budget item is explained.
Right.
So if you're going to be paying directly for a course, you want to explain what that total cost is per applicant or per participant in your program.
It's not going to be, you know, I wouldn't want to, you're not going to want, I don't know what the personnel and fringe is for them.
Right.
I am going to be paying for classes. And same with CLC. They have a program, and we're going to pay $3,000 for this veteran to learn how to become a welder.
Right.
So I will.
Okay, well, that's a little bit different because that's agreeing with
it. Okay, so the direct cost then is really just on the lead applicant, which is me, which is us.
Right, and every cost that you're going to incur, you want to be able to explain what those pieces are going
Absolutely.
To.
Absolutely. Okay, good.
Yep, that makes
I'll make
sense.
Sure. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, so I think that's about it for today. But if folks have additional questions, please feel free to email me. Again, my contact information is on the last slide of the presentation. It's bcrone@nchb.org. It also has my phone number there. I will be back in the office first thing tomorrow morning, assuming that our building is not on fire. And feel free to email me, and I can get back to you as soon as possible. And then as soon as I have the additional clarification coming from the Department of Labor on a few questions that I had sent them from previous teleconferences, I'll post that up on the website, and the audio from today's call will be available up on the website within the next few days as well. So thank you, everyone, for joining us, and good luck. Thanks.